This week on Straight Talk Africa, a historic changing of guard has taken place at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
She'll be a president we can all be proud of. And she will be a historic president who puts her stamp on America's future.
U.S. President Joe Biden has passed the torch to Democratic Party nominee Vice President Kamala Harris. Her rise to the top position on the ticket has been meteoric and historic. She is the first black woman to be nominated for U.S. president, and Harris is the first woman of Asian descent to seek the U.S. presidency. She has brought enthusiasm, hope, and a spike in donations to the Democratic Party. Can Kamala Harris ride this wave of momentum to the White House in November? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters here in Washington. I'm your host, Vincent McCourry. The campaigning season for the presidency in the United States has so far been unpredictable and eventful. President Joe Biden addressed the Democratic National Convention Monday evening as he sought to polish his legacy and pass the torch to Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's new presidential nominee. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara reports from the DNC in Chicago, Illinois.
Introduced by his daughter Ashley, President Joe Biden received a hero's welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
At the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois, he fulfilled his promise to be a transitional leader.
Are you ready to elect Kamala Harris and Tim Walz?
And gave his full support to Kamala Harris, the party's new presidential nominee for the November election.
But she'll be a president our children can look up to. She'll be a president respected by world leaders because she already is. She'll be a president we can all be proud of. And she will be a historic president who puts her stamp on America's future.
Biden was unchallenged at the Democratic primaries. Just a month ago, the roughly 4,000 delegates here were set to nominate him. But Monday, he balanced support for Harris and his achievements in office.
COVID no longer controls our lives. We've gone from economic crisis to the strongest economy in the entire world. Record 16 million new jobs. Record small business growth. Record high stock market. Record high 401ks. Wages up, inflation down, way down, and continuing to go down.
It started with a debate against Republican nominee former President Trump in late June. Biden, who is 81, had such dismal performance that people questioned his mental acuity. Then an assassination attempt on Trump that rallied Republicans and pushed him further ahead in the polls. For weeks, Biden insisted he would remain in the race, even as party leaders privately asked him to step aside.
Joe Biden is a one-term president who was forced off the ticket by the leaders of the Democratic Party, despite having won the nomination in the primaries. He's now asked to make an enthusiastic endorsement of his vice president, Kamala Harris. It doesn't take a Sigmund Freud to realize that he might be very conflicted about this.
If he's conflicted, then Joe Biden is not showing it at all, expressing strong support for Kamala Harris and basking in the love and gratitude of his party. We spoke to some convention delegates here on the floor.
It was a beautiful speech. It was a great speech of a culmination of years and years of service.
Well, I think his legacy is strong and positive, and tonight he told the American public why he loves them and what he did for 50 years to serve our nation. And it's an incredible record.
This despite Trump trying to sow division among Democrats.
They forced him out. It was a coup. We had a coup. That was the first coup in the history of our country.
Biden repeated Democrats' theme of Harris, a former prosecutor, going against Trump, who has been found guilty in court.
And crime will keep coming down. when we put a prosecutor in the Oval Office instead of a convicted felon.
Biden ended his speech with an embrace from Harris, cementing his role among Democrats as the leader who could possibly save the country again from Trump, this time by passing the torch.
Joe, thank you for your historic leadership, for your lifetime of service to our nation, and for all you will continue to do. We are forever grateful to you.
Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Chicago.
Well, thank you, Patsy, for that report. And now let's go to Chicago and our reporter there, Carol Van Dam, who is at the Democratic National Convention. Hi, Carol.
Hey, Vincent, how are you?
Fine. Now, you've been there for a couple of days covering the DNC. How would you describe the atmosphere up until Tuesday night?
I would say, you know, when we got here Monday, and we were here, of course, several hours before, but even like an hour before the speeches started, there really wasn't a packed room down here. There was only like a quarter of the people in here when the speeches had started. But by the time we got into about an hour before, you know, the main speakers, it was filling up and it was exciting. It was, you know, you could feel the enthusiasm. But last night, oh my gosh, I mean, the energy was just electrifying. And the Obamas, Michelle Obama, the former first lady, and Barack Obama, the former president who has been so popular and remains popular, they just blew the roof off the house here. It was really, really exciting. And, you know, some could argue that Michelle Obama might have even gotten the crowd more emotional than Barack Obama did with his message. Both were talking about hope. Both praised their mothers, and especially Michelle Obama's, who passed away not too long ago. And she said that was her last time here back in Chicago to attend her funeral. But they talked about being very hopeful for the future. And former President Obama even said, you know, we don't want four more years of chaos and bluster here. Mm-hmm. And everybody went crazy when he said that.
Now, of course, that's a major highlight there. Anything else stood out from the speeches? Anything in terms of messaging from anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that this time, you know, I would say to the lead up to this convention, Democrats haven't been, the leading Democrats I've heard speak, haven't been all that forceful about mentioning Trump by name, but they're doing it now. The Monday night speeches, they mentioned him over 50 times. And last night, you know, he made reference to Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, by saying, you know, we don't want these four more years of chaos and bluster of when he was president. And just saying, you know, we can't do that anymore. And, you know, made sure that they had to do the work themselves, that they can't wait mm-hmm. for somebody else to do it. And Michelle Obama made that point, too, saying, you know, you can't sit around. She talked about Kamala Harris's mother also saying, you can't just complain about things. You can't just sit around. You have to do something. That became a chant for a lot of people when she said, you know, we are going to do something. We're going to get out the vote ourselves. And, you know, what are you going to do? She was like a cheerleader last night.
Yes, Carol, there have been protests in the vicinity of the venue there. To what extent have they been noticed or even acknowledged by any of the speakers there?
They have been acknowledged, and, you know, there has been a nod to them. They haven't overtaken the speeches by any means, but even President Joe Biden himself mentioned them and said those people out there, something to the effect of, you know, they have a point. And he said he's working hard to bring the hostages home and to get a ceasefire. And something that Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, said, who's seen as a very liberal senator and sometimes a thorn on the side of the leading Democrats, including Joe Biden, had said himself, we're going to demand a ceasefire. But he also said we have to bring the hostages home.
Well, thank you very much, Carol. VOA's Carol Van Dam reporting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Now, for more insight into the Democratic Convention and the political realities of the U.S. election, I am joined in studio by Calvin Dock, political analyst and president of RC Communications. And by Skype from Nairobi, I'm joined by David Onsere Monda. He's a professor of political science at the City University of New York. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, let's start from a little distance. Professor Monda, you're in Nairobi, Kenya. You were following the proceedings very closely. What to you stood out prominently from Tuesday's speeches especially?
I think that the two big ones were Michelle Obama's speech, Joe Biden's speech, and former President Barack Obama's speech to try and rally the base of the Democratic Party. Traditionally, these conventions are really a spotlight for either the Republicans when they have theirs or the Democrats to really get free media attention and to give what we call that convention boost to the to the nominee of the party, but also in Kamala Harris's context to show Kamala Harris as a politician in her own right, that Joe Biden was passing the torch from his generation to a new generation, and that it would be policy continuity in light of the change of the guard, but that the emphasis on the different areas might be different with a Kamala Harris administration. Mm-hmm. So Obama, the two Obamas, and then Joe Biden, for me, I think was the highlight, especially in terms of the continuity of Democratic policy, but also in terms of showing a big difference between the Democrats' vision for USA and the Republicans' vision for the country under Donald Trump.
Yes. And now, Kevin, in fact, continue with that line of thought. In terms of messaging, you watched the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention ongoing now. There's a lot of character attack. But to what extent, in any of the two, would you say you've heard the message in terms of policy differences, strategy, and how each side wants to advance, the issues that matter to the Americans?
Well, I think that one thing that both conventions had in common is they didn't talk about issues that would at all be problematic. When I talk to a lot of my friends who are on the continent of Africa outside of the United States, they think about a convention as being, debates around the fine points of policy, which isn't present in either, because this is a commercial. I think two things that stand out for me is the Republican convention was unification. Like, there was no dissension. It was all supporting Donald Trump. We remember that came just days after the assassination attempt. And I think what we saw on the Democratic side was unification, but something that wasn't there under Joe Biden when he was the candidate. And that is enthusiasm that isn't tied to Donald Trump. Yes, there was a lot of criticism of Donald Trump, the dangers he might bring, according to some speakers. But a lot of the message was, as Michelle Obama said, hope is making a comeback. There was a message that didn't have anything to do with Donald Trump, and I think that was really positive.
Yes. And now, David, we have said, actually, Kelvin did mention that this is a commercial, right? And to a large extent, I always say that the people you see at the venue, on the floor there, are by and large converted. They are already supporters of the party, supporters of the candidate. The enthusiasm, the cheers are expected. To what degree does that translate into influence or at least persuasion outside of that venue to the people who may not have been inclined to vote to that particular candidate?
Rallying to the base, because don't forget that even though the country split almost down to the center between Republicans and Democrats, it has two purposes. In this case, one, to consolidate the party behind Kamala Harris, but also to remind Democrats that, they shouldn't boo the Republicans, as Barack Obama was saying, but they need to go out there and vote. So you're really trying to get members of your party to volunteer, to fundraise, and really to energize the party, because there's less than 80 days before the election. But I might also add that having the convention in Chicago, in Illinois, in the Midwest, really focuses the country on those battleground states. And with Tim Walz coming from Minnesota, another Rust Belt state, we really see the Democrats really attempting to ensure that the swing states, the states in the Midwest that will be swing vote states, are solidly behind the Democratic Party. So as much as the conventions are very ceremonial, but they very much really work to consolidate the base, and with this regional emphasis on the Midwest, I think we really see a focus on both parties on trying to make sure that those swing states in the Midwest will come strongly in focus in this election, because most of the rest of the country is either solidly red behind the Republicans or solidly blue behind the Democrats.
Well, it's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the race for the White House. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
The World Health Organization recommends that babies be exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months of life. Yet it has been reported that many mothers in Africa do not exclusively breastfeed their infants due to changing cultural norms and lactation challenges. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore how breastfeeding can contribute significantly to the child's survival and look at options for new mothers to produce or get access to safe breast milk. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
So while the promise of the protection of democracy is on the shoulders of Kamala Harris, and we fully believe that she will be that person to defend and protect our democracy, the people still have a responsibility. We have to vote. And the message has to be, let's not celebrate until 8:01 on November 5th. And then on November 6th, let's galvanize together and let's govern together.
Young Democrats, we're bringing in the optimism of course, the love thy neighbor. Of course, we're all Americans, and I believe that the Democratic Party can be the umbrella, the tent party for everyone to come into. I think it is able to reach out to a vast a variety of different perspectives.
I think that the polls are reflecting the energy that we felt on the ground when Kamala Harris became our nominee. You know, we had a rally in Arizona a week ago. Energy there was incredible, a great turnout, and just young people are super excited.
Welcome back. We just heard from delegates from different parts of the United States who are attending Democratic National Convention what they think of the Harris-Waltz ticket. We are discussing the U.S. elections and the candidacy of Vice President Kamala Harris, who has brought enthusiasm, hope, and a lot of money to the Democratic Party. My guests are Kevin Duck, a political analyst and president of RC Communications. And in Nairobi, we have David Monda, professor of political science at the City University of New York. Now, Kevin, we've heard from those delegates there, and you may want to chime in on whatever they said, but I wanted to just bring up this thought of a kind of a convergence of history here. I mean, we have when did we ever have a presidential candidate or nominee drop out a few months to an election? Mm-hmm. And then we have a lady who is, you know, a woman of color. So what has do you in your assessment, what has this done to the Democratic Party, to the Democratic National Convention?
Well, one thing, it's difficult for political analysts like myself because there's nothing to compare it to. So that's always fun. I think I would describe that as, you know, when Joe Biden gave his speech on Monday, there were two things that I think were 100% clear. The first was that it was a very difficult decision for him to do what you said, to withdraw from the race in a way that no sitting president has. But the second thing that was sure, it was the right decision, because Joe Biden saw that the enthusiasm that surrounds Kamala Harris would not have been possible with him. And so I don't hear anybody saying maybe he shouldn't have made that decision. And I think what happened is we've heard since the beginning of this election, majorities of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents did not want the sequel rematch between two 80-year-olds. And even Nikki Haley said the first political party to ditch their 80-year-old candidate has a good chance of winning. I think what happened with Kamala Harris is she has inspired people to not just defeat Donald Trump, but to actually think about what a president could be. And the fact that she would be unprecedented in who she is adds that enthusiasm that the Democrats need to win in November.
Mm-hmm. And talking about enthusiasm, David, you know, even watching from where you are now, the issue we just brought up of raising so much money because of, you know, because of Kamala getting into the race, so much has happened within a very short time. How are people to understand, especially that aspect of money just coming in for some of our viewers who may not see the connection? What does that tell about a candidate and about the campaign?
So I think it really shows the strong connection between money and speech, right? So if you go back to the case precedent of Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission of 2010, the Supreme Court ruled in that case that money was speech. And I think this opened the floodgates to monies and funding and support. Because the way Americans see their elections is, if McCrory is passionate about the Democratic Party or Republican Party, denying him his chance to donate his financial resources to that party is denying him speech. But the disadvantage of that is that some interests or some political players will have a bigger financial pockets than others. And this then raises the other challenge for what the critics of the U.S. system will say is that elections are being bought by the biggest players, corporations, unions, donors, billionaires, for both political parties. So that's really fundamentally the challenge. But I also want to add one quick point to your earlier question about history. We should not forget that the 1968 Democratic National Convention was in Chicago, Illinois, and the 2024 convention is in Chicago, Illinois. But the difference with both conventions was in 1968, the party was very divided. The Democrats are very divided around Vietnam, right, and a lot of other social issues. But we now see in 2024, the party is really surprisingly consolidated very quickly behind Kamala Harris. So there's also that very historical precedent, not only that you have the possibility of the first female black South Asian, South Indian president, but you also have this idea of first female president and the Democrats actually looking to break that glass ceiling that for 400 years has denied women access to the presidency of the United States.
Okay, Kevin, now the big question. We've seen the enthusiasm, we've seen the funds coming in. To what extent can that enthusiasm translate into, you know, a victory in November. Can she ride on this momentum that we are seeing into the White House?
I think she can, and I think that the two things to think about are, one, the timing. I know we always think about November 5th, but I'm from North Carolina, and my state, they send out ballots around the first week of September. So we're not talking about a long time for her to keep up that momentum. The second thing, and I think Barack Obama's most important point was this last night, when people started to boo Donald Trump, he said, don't boo, vote. That was a clear message because we see a lot of young people involved. We see the TikToks. I love the TikToks. We see the social media enthusiasm. But if that doesn't turn into votes, then it doesn't change the election. So if we can turn that enthusiasm into votes and keep up the momentum for a good five more weeks, Democrats can win.
And David, is it also, I don't know if I'm wrong on this, they say the Democrats suffer from that kind of apathy when it comes to voting, and probably the younger generation, right?
Right, exactly. And to add to Kevin's point, you know, it'll be very important to get, you know, three key constituencies for the Democrats out to vote, right? So the young people, as Kevin had mentioned, Kamala Harris really needs to work to get these new voters onto the electoral roll. Because remember, a lot of these swing states, you know, are won by very small margins. So that's one constituency, young voters. Second constituency will be suburban white women, college-educated white women. Let's not forget that they are very concerned around women's reproductive rights and women being denied access to abortion and to reproductive health services. But I think a third key constituency here will be for Kamala Harris to attempt to get at least Barack Obama numbers of black African-American voters out to vote. So we're looking at least above a 90-95% of the black vote. Because what Donald Trump has been trying to do, which is how he won in 2016, was to dampen that enthusiasm from the black voters in these key states. So that would be another key constituency. So young people, suburban white college-educated women, and African-American voters, these are three key constituencies for the Democrats, particularly in these swing states.
Yes. Kevin, quickly, of course, we had a lady there in the on the floor of the convention saying, you know, the Democratic Party can be this tent that kind of gets everybody in there. There is sometimes a perception that maybe the Republican Party doesn't attract black voters or people of color. But of course, Donald Trump said, no, I have a lot of support in that constituency.
Well, I think what Donald Trump, it's not clear if he's going to get that support, especially now since Kamala Harris is the candidate. But the message behind what he says is true, that nobody's vote is a given. No vote is guaranteed. And Democrats have to fight for every vote, including African-Americans, because Trump is. And the party that makes that convincing argument is the party that will win. Nobody owes their vote to any party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got to work for it. David, you had a thought?
Yes, to echo also what Kevin has mentioned, getting out the vote will be key, a very important question here. But I think also for Kamala Harris, she really needs to reemphasize the fact that she's running as a female candidate, as a candidate that happens to be female, that's able to do the job. Right, she really needs to reemphasize that, and she really needs to emphasize the policy differences that she has and her vision for America, how it will help pocketbook book issues for everybody.
Well, gentlemen, we have to leave it here. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. Kevin Dark and David Monda, we do appreciate your time, and thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.